Good evening. Welcome to the October 5th, 2017 City of Columbia Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting. May I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Russell.
Here.
Mr. Tuohy.
Here.
Ms. Burns. I'm here. Mr. Harder.
Here.
Mr. McMahon.
Present.
Mr. Stanton.
Here.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing.
Here.
We have eight. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Lowe. Any changes to the agenda, Mr. Zinner?
No, there aren't, Mr. Chairman.
All commissioners were good at the agenda? Okay. Approval of minutes. We were sent the September 21st, 2017 minutes. Were there any corrections or changes needed to those minutes? I see none. Thumbs up on approval of the September 21st, 2017 minutes. All thumbs up. Thank you. First item of the evening is a subdivision item. At this time, I would like to ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to case 17-190, please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. Case 17-190, a request by Civil Group on behalf of McGarry Properties, LLC, for approval of a one-lot final minor plat on A, agricultural zone land, to be known as McGarry Subdivision Plat 2, and for approval of a design adjustment to 29-5.1D to waive sidewalk construction along St. Charles Road. The 0.78-acre subject site is located at the northwest corner of St. Charles Road and Tower Drive. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you'd stated, this is a request for a one-lot final minor plat located along St. Charles Road. It's kind of the broad oblique aerial shot. You can kind of see the subject site in the center there along St. Charles with on the far west would be Keene Street and 63 and kind of the far northern extent of St. Charles where it crosses I-70 to give you some context on the surrounding properties and development patterns. We'll get back to the sidewalk here in a second, but just to kind of cover the basics of the case, they are requesting a one-lot final plat on previously unplatted property. They're part of the plat are dedicating the additional right-of-way for a major collector along St. Charles, as it's identified in the CATSO plan. So they will have a 33-half-width right-of-way. One thing to note on this is that if you have noted, the size of this lot is less than what is permitted in the A district. A requires a minimum of 2.5 acres. The applicant did go to the Board of Adjustment and was approved for a variance to allow less than that. So they are approved to create a lot that is no less than 0.5 acre, which this site is approximately 5,000 square feet larger than that. So it does comply with that Board of Adjustment ruling. The other portion of this is a request for a design adjustment for the construction of sidewalk along St. Charles Road, which is approximately 215 feet or so of street frontage. So this is an aerial or a street shot of the approximate location of the sidewalk as it's would be generally located along St. Charles with the additional right-of-way dedicated. The sidewalk would typically be constructed at the property or at the right-of-way line just outside the property. And as you can see there, and this is mentioned in the applicant's information they provided, that there is some grade challenges to here or to the construction in this location. It does dip away to the north from this site, away from St. Charles. There are telephone poles in the way as well. But generally, no major obstructions in the general vicinity of the sidewalk. Oh, I think I lost a slide in there, so I will go from memory. But generally, there are four categories or four items that we review per the policy resolution from Council 48-06A, which is instructs us to evaluate it based on these four criteria when the sidewalk waiver is along a unimproved street, which basically means it doesn't have curb and gutter. Just real quick, one of those being the relative cost of the sidewalk to the development. The applicant did provide information about potential costs to bring in the fill that would be necessary. Generally, for a unimproved sidewalk location such as this, we do have a standard street design spec that gives a general location where the sidewalk would be relative to the existing pavement. That would probably require them to bring in fill to bring the elevation of that sidewalk up to some to a level that is more consistent with that plan, most likely 4 or 5 feet, given the elevations that we have on our topographic information through our GIS. They did compare that to the cost of the proposed development as far as the lot sale goes. It may be more appropriate to compare that to what the cost of building a home there, which is what we normally compare that to. Generally, we get these requests when a home is being constructed. So we didn't have a finalized number for the total cost of the sidewalk or what the potential construction of a building would be per se, but the applicant might be able to provide some more information on that. As you can see here, number two, the terrain is such that sidewalks are feasible. There would be, again, some fill, maybe considerable fill that would need to be brought in. There's nothing specifically that would absolutely prevent it from being done, but the terrain would have to be altered somewhat and that elevation, again, risen. They may need to do some avoidance of the telephone poles in general in this location. The number three would be the basically a overview of what the development pattern is in the area, and it basically looks at sites where there is low development, a developed area with low traffic volume and without sidewalks. This location is generally undeveloped, so the potential for future developed constructing sidewalks is high. St. Charles is a major collector, may not have as high traffic volume as some other collectors, but we don't have really current traffic count data for this location. But again, it is scheduled for or identified as a major collector. And it is generally without sidewalks in the direct adjacent vicinity of this, although if you go east, there are some instances of future development that could facilitate additional sidewalk construction, one of those being the Coliseum preliminary plat that was approved recently to the east of this site. Number four would be pedestrian generators, and in general, there are very few pedestrian generators near this site. If you go back to the broad aerial, generally the closest ones would be kind of a commercial core or commercial hub to the east, King Street to the west. There are no parks generally in this location. There is a trail access along St. Charles further to the west, but generally looking at 3/4 to a mile of distance between significant pedestrian generators, perhaps. Taking all those factors together, staff was of the opinion that they didn't reach the threshold for granting a full variance. We are recommending denial of the variance, but approval of the plat generally as it conforms to UDC standards. So the outcome then at this point would be possibly threefold. If P&Z chooses to grant a variance, a sidewalk variance in this situation, they would basically waive all requirement for a sidewalk. They could choose to deny the variance and then look at two alternatives, and one would be to do nothing, and in that sense, then a sidewalk would be constructed within 3 years, which is the time given in a performance contract, or once a house is built on the site, whichever is sooner. Or they could look to accept a fee in lieu in a situation where sidewalk construction this time wasn't considered to be the best option. So, happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Commissioners, any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Planner Smith, could you go back to that oblique aerial for me, please?
Sorry, which one?
The oblique aerial, the one you had up just a moment ago. Thank you. It's my understanding that to the east of this property, we have development and or potential development happening rather quickly. Is that a correct assumption?
I could tell you the Coliseum preliminary plat is located in this general vicinity here, so they have an approved preliminary, so they could move forward with a final plat at any point. I'm not aware of any other movement on that site since preliminary was approved.
To the south of the property across the street, is there any development in that area?
large property to the south? Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. And then as we move to the east, just east of the trail junction, those large feet there, anything in that general area? Anything in the pipeline, so to speak?
No, not that I'm aware of.
All right. That's the question I have for the moment. Thank you very much.
Commissioners, any additional questions for staff? I see none. As we do in past practice, this is a subdivision matter, not a public hearing, but if there is someone in the audience that would like to come forward and give us any relevant information to this case, you're welcome to do that at this time. We just ask that you give us your name and address, please.
Good evening, Chairperson and Chair members. My name is Kevin Murphy. I'm with Ace Civil Group. Our offices are 3401 Broadway Business Park Court. I've got some additional photos and information here, if you wouldn't mind. If you wouldn't mind, after this discussion, if I could get those back, save some paper for City Council.
So don't write on it.
Here representing McGarry Properties. McGarry Properties consists of Terry McGarry and his wife and his sister, Deetra. These are the only four properties that they own. They're just immediately around this property. They're just doing some house cleaning. They inherited this property from their parents, who bought it in the late 60s, early 70s, and they've inherited that. They want to kind of get it all cleaned up so their heirs do not have to deal with it. The pictures I'm showing you here shows quite a bit better the slope on this ground. The graphic that Mr. Smith had up there was not quite accurate. The sidewalk goes back a good bit further than what that is. And some of those fill areas in there, I would say, average 4.5 feet deep. In the back of all those pictures, I kind of drew a graphic as well with some additional information below it. But, yes, 4.5 to 5 foot deep a fill. The cost that Clint was discussing was just for the fill dirt alone in that area. We would also have to reconstruct the driveway that is on the south end of this property, as that driveway does cross onto this property. So not only leveling that out, actually raising it above the street, 6 inches for the curb, and then a 2% slope to the property line, and then come back down at a 3-to-1 slope, extends it out even further. If you're finished looking at those pictures on the diagram that I had, I've got a few notes on there. A typical sidewalk location is 7 to 12 feet closer to the street. So that's a 38-foot pavement in a 66-foot right-of-way, or a 32-foot street in a 50-foot right-of-way. Sidewalk construction is 214 feet on an improved street would be at $4 a square foot would be a little over $4,000. Sidewalk construction with the grading on here is over twice of that. For the grading only is $10,200. That equates to 13% of the cost of the lot. If we assume this lot's worth $45,000, that's 13% for the dirt work only that it adds. 23% of the cost for the dirt work and the walk, and then if we had to rebuild the driveway and such, that would be 49% of the cost. Almost 50% of the cost of what they would be able to get for this ground would be building a sidewalk in this area, considering all those factors. With this plat, the owner's dedicated over 7,000 square foot of right-of-way, which alone at $1.68 a foot, square foot would equate to 21% 13% of the cost of the lot, it totals 21% of the ground that they initially had. There's 1.5 miles of street between Richland and I-70, and there's currently 610 feet of existing sidewalk on there, possibly 600 more if the Coliseum development does eventually final plat, and that is a 43-lot subdivision. So for us to put in a third of the amount of sidewalk for one lot versus 43 lots is quite a bit more burdensome. The closest sidewalk connector, as was pointed out, is the Hominy Creek Trail. It's about a half a mile, and that's accessing it through a private development and private streets, or three quarters of a mile where there's a public street access to that. As far as improving St. Charles Road, the current CIP list has, in the 1 to 10 year range, has 16 street projects. Each one of those projects are come at no cost to the adjacent property owners, and some are actually getting compensation for right-of-way and easements with that, and they're getting sidewalks constructed with that as well. In the 10 years plus CIP program, there's 92 street projects. Again, no cost to the adjacent owners. So if you take 92 projects, it's 16 projects per 10 years. That equals 5.75 10-year project cycles. So that's 57 and a half years to get through all of these projects. St. Charles Road is not on the 10 years plus CIP plan. I think I had spoken with a supervising engineer at the city, and after he had really reviewed it, I don't think he was the one that did take a look at it, but he agreed that if there was an area for a variance, this would be one of them. He had suggested, again, the payment in lieu of for the $4 or whatever it takes for the concrete square footage work. I think we would request that the city entertain the dedication of this additional right-of-way, the 7,000 square feet, as in lieu of payment.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any questions of the speaker? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, sir. I do hear your point. I spent a lot of time very near this property. I'll just tell you that right away. And one of the reasons I asked Planner Smith about these developments is I know that many of the adjacent property owners are looking to sell and or develop. So I was just wondering where we were on this. And St. Charles will develop. And you're so right about the CIP. The CIP is reflective, my view, of how much money the city has or doesn't have. That's why it's 57 and a half year cycle. So I wanted to get back to the fee in lieu of, because I'd love to see sidewalks on St. Charles, or because we have these problems. We build out and then we've got no sidewalks and everyone wants a variance. Your view of a payment in lieu of would be the donation of the property alone, other cash or anything like that to help the city in the future? I mean, you're presenting the sidewalk's going to cost $20,000 for you guys to do or something like that, right?
Or more.
23.
Again, we haven't really, as a single lot subdivision and us being hired to really just do the subdivision process, the platting process, we haven't really studied this, immensely. But we consider that 7,000 square feet, over $11,000 in value.
I don't doubt you there.
Fee, yeah. What I have heard from the city councilor in a previous variance request was, if you read the, I don't know if you've got a copy of the policy resolution on unimproved sidewalks. In there, it notes that somewhere in here that the sidewalk, the payment in lieu of is for the sidewalk to be constructed on that property. The I think the city councilor has backed that up, but they said that there could only be a 7-year time limit associated with that. The city can't indefinitely hold this money. That there has to be a time limit within that they can use that property to do something towards a project. So I think that's where that stands. So to me, it's just less paperwork for the city and everything else to, keep track of this. I know they're always trying to cut back on on items that they have to consistently track, land developments and things of that nature. But
any additional questions of this figure? Yes, sir.
In looking at the pictures,
you know, when someone decides to build on this, I mean, it looks like they're going to have to haul in a bunch of dirt anyway just to build a house. So
no, they'll build into the hill. The house will come down. It may require a small retaining wall if they want a flat area in front of the house. But basically the access, it'll be an open-ended two-story ranch. The access will be, and the garage will be on the back side of the house.
Any additional questions, Mr. Tui?
Whoops, sorry about that.
Yes, Ms. Lowe?
Just clarification on the right-of-way. I mean, this is a requirement for being on the major collector, St. Charles.
Yes, it is, but a lot of time that's granted, again, by 40, 50, 100-lot subdivisions where, you know, that where somebody's making a decent profit off of grant and can afford to have the ground and can't afford to donate that type of
I bring it up because all property owners along St. Charles have to provide that right-of-way to St. Charles, correct?
If they plat, if the city were to go out and say they wanted to build that road tomorrow, well, you're going to buy that right-of-way from me.
Any additional questions, Ms. Lowe? Thank you. Additional questions for the speaker, commissioners? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional speakers like to come forward? I see none. Thank you. Commissioners, further discussion, questions for staff, clarification? I might like to get us started. Ms. Russell. Mrs. Russell.
This is for staff, really. Could you give us the, you listed three options that we could do. Could you do those one more time?
Sure. It'd basically be, one would be to recommend approval of the variance, would basically waive all requirement for them to be financially responsible for the sidewalk. One would be to deny the variance, but then consider accepting a fee in lieu instead of construction or allowing the construction, which would basically be denying the variance and just flat as it is. That makes sense.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Ms. Lowe.
Can you comment on any limitations within that? You were describing a three-year requirement, I believe, for the sidewalk to be constructed if
Correct.
The variance was not granted. And can you comment on the seven-year limit on payment in lieu?
Sure. I'll start with 3 years. So in a situation such as this where there's necessary public infrastructure, we require some sort of surety, and the performance contract is that surety, and it guarantees that the infrastructure will be constructed within 3 years. And then they can extend that if they have not constructed at that point as well. But typically, if you submit an application for a building permit, sidewalk construction is part of that as well, so that would trigger it potentially at that point. The 7 years, I'm not familiar with a limitation on collecting fee in lieu type situations where we would not be able to hold it for X amount of years. So I do know there's some limitation on the performance contract, and it may expire, you know, at a seven-year point, but that's kind of a whole different conversation, I think. So maybe that was part of that, but as far as that, unless Mr. Zinner has more information.
And I was just conferring with our legal counsel, Mr. Caldera. I believe we may have 7 and 8 years maybe being misplaced here. The standard performance contract, as Mr. Smith was just explaining, is a three-year standard performance contract. In the event that a performance contract is breached, meaning that the improvements required to be installed have not been done within those 3 years, the city does have, at a minimum, 5 additional years in which to seek to get performance out of that original performance contract, which means a total of 8 years, potentially. We are unaware of any limitation as it relates to a fee in lieu of being able to be applied to a project within its general area within the city's structure or its authority to receive money in light or in lieu of an actual improvement. If there is no improvement or the improvement is made, I am personally aware of this because we have had to refund money that was allocated for a particular improvement after that improvement was funded through another source. So if, in fact, this money is not, if it's received, it's going to be cataloged with this particular request, with this roadway segment, and as a CIP project were to become available to have it applied to, it would be coded and applied to this project. Prior practices have not always been able to monitor where that money goes or how it's been received and where it's intended to. You learn from your past mistakes, and we have developed systems that allow us to track the money to the projects that may be impacted by those contributions. So we have vacillated as a commission and as a council, I believe, as it relates to payment in lieu of versus the actual requirement of construction. So that is the situation you're in here. You either delay construction until there's more of a system by which it could be improved, and that may be through other development. It may be through a city project. As Mr. Murphy points out, this particular roadway segment is not on the 10-year CIP. That does not necessarily mean that should development explode in this particular area, that that roadway does not get placed on the 10-year CIP list. We're through a, right now, we're in a 10-year bond window for road construction. It would have to be contemplated and then obviously queued in as we look at development. I think, Ms. Lowe, you pointed out very accurately, any property along this particular area of St. Charles Road that is proposing to subdivide is required to dedicate right-of-way. They are required to construct sidewalk without the grant of modification to such. Mr. Murphy is also correct that if we were to proceed forward with a roadway project, we would be acquiring potentially, or we would be having dedicated to us for other considerations, right-of-way to facilitate that particular road improvement. Waiver of sidewalk construction is basically the placement of a burden for its construction onto the public at some point in the future.
Thank you. Ms. Lowe.
One final question for staff. If the city undertook the sidewalk construction and that modified elevation or apron at the entrance of the driveway, would the city then reconstruct the driveway, or would that be on the owner's responsibility?
That would be our responsibility as a result of the road construction project.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Mr. Stanton.
City group brought up the possibility of giving the land over. Are we saying that that was going to happen anyway?
Yes, that,
so
that was
no value in that deal for us as a city.
As part of the, in order to be approved, they have to give the right of way for St. Charles. Since it's, you know, they have to do that as part of this process, regardless. The applicant would like to use that as payment towards, in lieu of doing the sidewalks. They believe there's a value to that, those, you know, that land that they're donating or giving, you know, giving to the city for right of way, for future right of way. They would like to see that value be associated with the sidewalk, where normally that would be just required as part of the process. And as we all understand that, you know, we are not requiring them to put sidewalks. They're coming to us asking for a change and for a final, you know, so they're asking for, right. So, that's what's triggering it, not vice versa. Commissioners, Mr. McMahon?
I just have a bit of discussion. It has been four sidewalks. It has been our policy in this community for some time to add sidewalks where we could to improve walkability, quality of life, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things we're asked to do all the time is to give sidewalk variances. And sometimes they can't work, like physically they don't work. It physically works here. I understand the financial burden. I would anticipate, this is just my view, there's a lot of buzz in the St. Charles area that property's going up in price. It'll certainly develop inside 10 years. Whether the city improves that road, I don't know. Our practice of continually giving sidewalk variances is problematic, because then we come back in the future and the next guy down says, you didn't make XYZ did it, why, you know, he's 100 further down or something like that. That's all I have to say. I do not have a motion.
Commissioners, any additional discussion? A motion? Mr. Mann?
Let's just put it to a vote. I move in the case of 17-190 McGarry Subdivision Plat Number 2, final plat, to approve the plat and to deny the design adjustment.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon, for the motion to approve the plats but not the sidewalk variance adjustment, design adjustment. And thank you, Mrs. Trader, for a second. Sorry, I'm trying to do two things at once. Is there any additional discussion needed on that motion second? Mr. Stanton.
Would it be appropriate to add an amendment?
Not if we're denying. If we're denying the variance,
the motion is to deny the sidewalk. The applicant would be required to build a sidewalk under the current motion, as is that was seconded. Am I correct?
That is how I put it.
Any additional discussion needed? I see none. Can I have a roll call, Ms. Lowe?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Russell.
No.
Mr. Toohey.
Yes.
I vote no. Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Stanton.
No.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
5 approve, 3 denial. Motion passes.
Thank you, Ms. Lowe. Our recommendation will be the motion was approved, as was. So our recommendation will be forwarded to City Council for their consideration and approval, or not. Moving on to our first public hearing item. So we'll go. And we'd like to, because commissioners, if you'll hand your copies forward, and we appreciate the applicant's desire to be environmentally friendly. Recycle.
There you go.
Reuse. Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Go ahead and open to the first public hearing, case 17-212. At this time, I would ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to case 17-212, please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of the case in front of us. I see none. Thank you. Case 17-212, a request by Jones, Snyder, and Stevens, LLC, on behalf of the family of George R. Lewis, for permanent R1, which is the one-family dwelling, zoning upon annexation of property at 1001 West Old Plank Road. The subject property consists of 1 acre and is currently zoned Boone County RS, which is the county's residential single family. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may, Mr. Chairman. As you can see here on the locator graphic, this is where the property is located, just to the east of Glasgow Drive, which is the back entrance to the Highlands subdivision off of Old Plank Road. This is a improved single-family parcel in the county, zoned AR, as indicated, consisting of roughly 1 acre. The business directly across the street from this is a landscaping center that is currently also in the AR zoning district in the county. So that's a little bit of just county commercial that is to the south. And immediately to the northwest of this property, which is up in the picture, is the more recently approved Highlands Plat 8 parcel that we had discussed several months ago with the Planning Commission. This is the oblique aerial, and as I was just pointing out, here is our Highlands Plat 8 lots, the two single-family lots that have the trail connection that comes back down into the common land that is part of Creek Ridge subdivision, which is just to the southeast of Old Plank Road. And there is the parcel with Glasgow Drive to your west as it heads back into the Highlands subdivision. The purpose behind the request this evening, and this is a permanent zoning request subject to annexation, is to allow the property owners to connect their property to city municipal sewer to replace the failing septic system, their on-site system that they have on their property today. That connection would be to the northwest, which would be, in essence, back behind this property here and potentially would require the extension of a public force main to be able to get onto this particular property to allow for a lateral line to be connected to it in accordance to our city requirements. Whenever anyone is wanting to connect to city service, if they are contiguous, they must annex into the city. And in this particular instance, they are contiguous both on the north, slightly on the northeast, and then, of course, on the northwest where they abut this parcel that is in the Highlands itself. At this point, they are not required to plat the property. If redevelopment on this site would occur, full replatting and dedication of additional road right-of-way for Old Plank Road would be required, as well as the installation of sidewalks from the discontinuance of sidewalk on Glasgow Drive all the way around the corner of this particular property, which would ultimately potentially have provided connection to the trail that was built at the end of the Highlands Plat 8 lot that would maybe get you over to the Creek Ridge common area that the Parks and Recreation Department has recently acquired. It's a pretty straightforward request. This is R1. The RS is consistent with the actual zoning, and it appears as though this is zoned AR, which is agriculture. We'll refer to that maybe just a zoning error on the map. Nonetheless, the two zoning designations are comparable, R1, AR, or RS. We believe that this is appropriate. We'll correct an environmental issue that may be beginning to mount by allowing the public connection of sewer. It is contiguous with the city boundary, so it does maintain the idea of compact and contiguous development and growth. We would recommend approval. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Commissioners, questions of staff? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification, the extension of the force main, the connection to the city sewer, that would be paid for by the property owner?
That would be correct, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Any additional questions? I see none. We'll go ahead and open the public hearing. So anyone that's in the public that would like to come forward, we would welcome you at this time. Just please give us your name and address. I see none. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing. Commissioners, in discussion or questions? Mr. Stanton.
As it relates to case 17-121, Lewis Annexation, I move to approve the annexation.
Second.
Permanent zoning.
Oh, excuse me. Okay. I move to approve permanent zoning.
R1
zoning. Okay. It relates to case 17-212.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton, for the motion, and Ms. Lowe for the second. Commissioners, questions, discussion on the motion that we have in front of us? I see none. Ms. Lowe, when you're ready for roll call, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Toohey.
Yes.
I vote yes. Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Mr. Strodeman.
Yes, ma'am.
And Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Unanimous 9 votes in the approval. Motion carries.
8.
Oh, sorry, 8.
Thank you, Ms. Lowe.
Thank you, Ms. Rushing.
The motion has been approved and will be, our recommendation will be forwarded to City Council, and they can use it in their consideration. Moving on to the next case. At this time, I'd like to ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to case 17-228. Please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. I see no one, so thank you. Case 17-228, a request by A Civil Group on behalf of Cherry Hill Dental Associates for approval of a PD development plan to be known as Gadbo's Professional Offices. The 1.36-acre property is located at the northwest corner of Nifong Boulevard and Santiago Drive. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may, Mr. Chairman. And what I would like to point out in front of you, there is a packet of material that was provided to you this evening. These are revisions to the site plan as well as some supplemental documents that were not available to us at the time of the report production. And there is also going to be, as we get to the point of a recommendation, a modification of the staff's recommendation based upon the packet that is in front of you. I will walk you through that as we move through this presentation. So as was stated, this is a request to approve a site development plan, a PD plan, for the Gadbo's Professional Offices. The Gadbo's are the operators, owners and operators of Cherry Hill Dental. They are looking at moving their facility to this particular location, which is a two-story structure. The dental office would be on the second story of the structure, with the first floor being utilized as leased space within the PD district, which was a former CP zone, so before it was converted to PD. As you can tell, this is located on Nifong Boulevard, corner of Santiago and Diego. The bank, First State Community Bank, is immediately to the west, and then behind and to the north is Jeff Smith's projects of Bethel Ridge 1 and Bethel Ridge 2, the assisted living facilities. This is about an acre and a third, and then we are looking at that planned district approval. The oblique aerial gives you a little bit better idea of the surrounding context. In the west side of this picture was under construction at the time it was taken. What is now Bethel, or the new Jeff Smith project right there, four-story building, immediately to the south is the first phase of Gentry Estates. The second building has been built since this area was taken, and then all of the foreground just south of Nifong is zoned a planned district as well, but that is a commercial planned district with a series of significantly more intense commercial uses being allowed on it, similar to what we have over in the Peachtree Center. Immediately to the northeast, you'll notice the apartments and then some single-family rental homes there up off of Bethel. Getting to the more detailed area here, this is the proposed site plan that was submitted for the staff report. This site plan has undergone some slight modifications for what has been placed in front of you this evening, and to point those modifications out just to make sure that we are all familiar with what we're looking at. This particular monument style sign is no longer in this location. This monument sign has actually been eliminated off of the plan. The monument sign that was on the east side of the property just south of Diego has been moved to the west side of the easternmost entrance, and it is compliant with our sign requirements for monument style or freestanding signs within the CP or the MC zoning district, which would be the comparable for this former CP zone property based on the roads. The two signs on the front are actual what we would refer as obelisks type signs. They are not traditional monument style or freestanding pylon signs. They are more linear in nature. You do have on the bottom of the actual development plan that was provided for you, just to the left of the actual scale, a graphic of what that particular sign on the front of the building would look like. There is wall signage that was originally proposed on this development plan that was as part of the commission packet. It is still on the building. Wall signage here on the eastern front and wall signage on the western side of the actual property and the building that's proposed to be constructed. And we're going to get back to the signage issue and what the applicant is asking for within the proposal here momentarily. Otherwise, you are right now fully parked in accordance with the parking regulations for a medical office building, right at about 92 parking spaces. And the other thing that you may or may not be able to discern from the documents that you have in front of you or from what you had seen online, this property is encumbered by a series of utility easements, which make placement, traditional placement of freestanding signage a little bit more challenging than normally would be encountered on commercial sites. There is a full utility easement that runs the Santiago frontage, and then there is a full utility easement that runs the entire Nifong frontage. Parking is allowed within a utility easement. However, no permanent structure, such as a sign or a building, would be allowed within that easement. So it has to be set back behind the easement. The design of this site, with circulation coming around the building to the front, to where you have the higher traffic volumes, does not really permit the placement of a freestanding sign close enough to the right-of-way to make it visible, or at least visible to the traveling public on Nifong. These signs, as we will discuss here momentarily, are not necessarily intended for the purposes of drawing attention. They are directional in nature almost, though they will provide some type of identity to tenants that are in the lower level of this particular building that is proposed. As I have said, this is a two-story structure. Dental Hill, or Cherry Hill Dental, will be on the upper floor and dealing with the entire upper story of this building, as well as then speculative tenant spaces on the lower level. At this point, there is an intention of at least two, splitting the building in half, in essence, on that ground floor. The property is zoned PD. It was originally part of the Premier Bank, now Community State Bank CP plan. And as we were reviewing the original development plan and preparing the staff report, we made comments as it related to the signage being in excess of what was allowed by our sign code. As many of the commissioners may be aware, the language within our planned zoning district provisions does allow an applicant to propose signage that is not in that is inconsistent with the sign requirements of the sign code. Should the Planning Commission agree to permit that signage and council final approve it, the signage standards that the applicant may request can be approved. As staff evaluated the project towards the tail end of its review and preparation for this meeting, there were a couple of unanswered questions. The total sign area on the wall signage on the east and the west faces of the building seemed to be extremely excessive, as well as it exceeded the requirements or the maximum requirements that are defined within the sign code for on-premise and wall signage to the west of Monterey, which is just to the east and outside of this picture where the multifamily begins immediately adjacent to or across the street from the Phillips 66 gas station, if you're familiar with that location, and where the Landmark Bank is that's just up the street to the east here. In discussing the signage concerns with the applicant's engineer, we were able to conclude that, in fact, the signage area that was proposed, when you looked at the actual sign text, not what our code would typically require the sign area to be calculated upon, the actual physical sign, the lettering and the image, was not in excess of what was allowed by the sign code. And let me confuse you a little bit more while I have you here. The sign code specifically states that a parcel such as this has the ability to have one freestanding sign per roadway frontage. We have three roadway frontages. You have Nifong, you have Santiago, you have Diego. It furthermore states that in the on-premise or the wall sign provisions, that wall signage cannot be any greater than 64 square feet if you have a freestanding sign. If you did not have a freestanding sign, you would be allowed sign area greater than that, based on a formula, up to 128 square feet. However, the sign specific restriction that says signage to the west of Monterey capped it at 64 square feet, however, did not eliminate the ability to still have the three freestanding signs on the property, which were also allowed to be a maximum of 64 square feet. You take all that and muddle that for a moment, and then look at the architectural design plans that have been attached to this particular project, and giving consideration to what other utility easements affects this property, the sign application and the request actually started to make a little bit of sense to staff as we got a better understanding. The complete southern wall of this building is a glass curtain wall, very unique to development for commercial structures here within the city of Columbia. To be quite honest, Mr. Palmer is the project manager on this, architect, landscape architect. This is a very appealing looking building. And because of the glass curtain wall design, there is no room, in essence, to do some type of wall signage on this southern wall. So we come to the first issue of two freestanding signs on the same frontage, Nifong Boulevard. Initially, staff was concerned that that was doubling up your signage on the single frontage. However, when you think about where the utility easement is on the east side of this property on Santiago, you really couldn't get a freestanding sign on the roadway frontage based on the fact that there's a utility easement that occupies almost all of the parking spaces along the Santiago frontage. And the Gabois in the design of this building really were trying to reduce the amount of wall signage in order to protect the integrity of the appearance of the building as something unique. The architectural features to the building will be different. This is more of like a split stone exterior with the glass curtain wall. And they were really desiring to be able to do something a little bit more simplistic and sleek in the way of its signage package. And therefore, the two obelisk signs, the freestanding signs, are at the entrances to that first lower level that is basically the tenant space. The applicant agreed to reduce that total square footage from what could have been a maximum of 64 square feet to there are 232 square foot signs, but they're only going to be on two sides. They're on the south-facing side, which would face Nifong, and then the sign that would be on the east side of the building would have signage pointing out to the parking lot to direct customers to the tenant that may be in that eastern tenant space. And likewise, on the west side of the building, you would have one face facing Nifong, and you'd have one face facing the parking lot, allowing identification to that lower-level tenant. The wall signage on the building then became the next major question. Well, let me back up. The idea of having the two signs on the Nifong frontage, given that this whole property had the ability to have three freestanding signs, we're really considering at this point, for the commission needs to consider and staff had to, is the location of that Santiago freestanding sign to the front of the building nearest that eastern entry door that problematic? Does it serve a better directional purpose? Does it serve a purpose that will actually allow users of this building to be able to get to that location easily for wayfinding purposes? Staff's opinion, after we reviewed what was being proposed and really the rationale behind it, did not necessarily have a problem, given that generally the overall signage on the entire site is actually less than would otherwise be permitted by roughly 128, almost 160 square feet less when you combine all of the signage, freestanding plus wall. So first and foremost, we don't, as a staff at this point, have an objection to the additional sign that reads to Nifong, but it also reads to Santiago. So if you consider the easternmost freestanding sign as the Santiago sign, because it does read to Santiago as well, but it's just in a different location. It's not in that traditional location on the Santiago frontage. It's not in the middle of it. It's not in the middle of the building either. If it were in the middle of the building, we wouldn't be having this conversation. They've just decided to move it to the corner. They moved it to the corner for very practical reasons, in staff's opinion. The rear sign that is at the eastern entrance actually is a 48-square-foot sign, which is smaller than what is permitted. They have actually reduced that sign, and they are using it more or less to basically just provide direction into the actual parking area and for tenants or users that will come to the facility itself. There is no signage on the Diego side of the building, wall signage. The only sign that would be present on the Diego frontage is this freestanding sign. The signage then, moving to the wall signage. The wall signage, again, as I said, was restricted to 64 total square feet by the additional supplemental restriction we have of signs west of Monterey. The original, the sign ordinance requires that a rectangle be drawn around the entire sign area, meaning if you have a lot of dead space, if you happen to have a letter that protrudes up, you don't go around just the protruding letter that goes up or down. You make a box that goes around all of it. That's really not, it's providing way too much sign area that's not even covered by a sign or doing anything but any advertising. So what the applicant is proposing, as you will see again in the lower diagram, how they have arrived at their calculation of the square footage, it actually goes around the image or the letters that make up Cherry Hill Dental that are on the east and the west frontages. Those are under 64 square feet, meaning they're compliant with the stipulated, the special standard west of Monterey. And they are also compliant with the specific standard that says if you have freestanding signs on your property, you cannot have wall signage greater than 64 square feet. We had one additional concern. And that was that the western-faced sign was actually not going to be readable from Nifong. Typically, the only zoning district and the only use that will allow you to have signs on wall signs on all sides of your building is a hotel. It's a specifically called out feature within that, and it can breed to a parking lot. Now, shopping centers, on the other hand, I can see Mr. Strootman's head shaking a little bit because he knows he has tenants in his mall that actually have signs that read to the internal parking lot. Shopping centers have a special exception. This is not a shopping center by any means. It's an office building. The last graphic that you have in your packet of material is an actual view shed or view triangle that is from the intersection of Bethel and Nifong back toward this building. To prove the point that the applicant was making to us is no, the western face sign will be readable to the traveling public, and it will be readable to them in such a way that it will not be a distraction. You will be approaching the building and reading the sign. You will not be looking over your shoulder trying to read a monument-style sign that is up against the building itself. So when you put all of these factors together, you look at the signage package itself is in compliance with our sign requirements, though it is modified because we have moved the one Santiago sign over into the front of the building, which then you could technically conclude it reads and it is located on Nifong's frontage. Staff would say if that's the interpretation the commission would like to make, it is not an incorrect interpretation. However, understanding what the applicant is trying to achieve by having directional signage for the tenant that is in that lower level justifies that sign location in staff's mind. The wall signage, consistent with not only the freestanding sign restriction that you cannot have wall signage greater than 64 square feet if you have a freestanding, and it meets the other supplemental standard for signage west of Monterey. Our original report was prepared with a lack of complete understanding of the applicant's approach. That is why it was produced with a recommendation of denial. The recommendation that is being provided to you this evening, though, after review of this documentation, the site plan has been amended as we were originally asking. The statement of intent has been amended accordingly to ensure that the sign maximum areas are all consistent between both plan and statement of intent design parameter worksheet. We are comfortable in making a recommendation of approval on this project with the recommended or the requested sign modifications. We believe that this is going to be a good addition to this particular portion of the Nifong corridor and may set a standard for architectural design requirements as it relates to other construction here within the community in the future. If you have questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Commissioners, questions? Mrs. Russell.
Is there any intention to light these signs?
I will let the applicant's engineer or the, I don't know if the applicant's here tonight to refer to that. It's my understanding they may be internally lit, so they, it would make for a very interesting, non-traditional type of sign as an obelisk, if that is actually there internally lit. But I'll let Mr. Gebhardt or Mr. Dar answer those questions since they are the project managers for the project.
Okay.
Mr. McMahon.
A quick question. Moving forward, I've got no problems with this wall signage, and their wall signage as is relieved, you know, brought out, and there's no rectangle around it. You basically squash the rectangle.
Yes.
Right?
Well, okay. Exactly.
If in the future, if this situation were to occur similarly, and we didn't squish the rectangle, or it wasn't relieved out, it wasn't pushed away from the building, the way Ellis Michelle's is on the hospital. The old hospital. Are you with me? It does the same thing. It sticks out from the building. How does this change things going forward, or does it?
I don't think it does. I would tell you that the way that the code is written, the way that the sign code is written, it's a little bit archaic in how it identifies what our building and code enforcement staff is required to do to calculate. You have to, when you look at signage, you have to look at what the intent was. We didn't want a gargantuan sign. Typically in codes that I have worked with, the calculation, the method of calculation and how you draw the box around the text that's part of that, what is being proposed by the applicant is consistent with what I have seen previously. You draw a rectangle around the actual enlarged or small graphics. You don't do it based on an arbitrary box that goes around them that fits to all in it. What I would tell you is a recommended revision to the sign code may be appropriate when we go through our first round of revisions with the UDC in order to get to something that's a more contemporary application for sign measurement, for sign area measurement.
That's kind of where I was going.
And I think that that's, so that's a very valid. It's a very
archive
valid.
That and you know, label it, flag it, so we can will. Note okay. it going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any additional questions, commissioners? I have a question, Mr. Zinner. Pylon signs, are they four-sided? Signage would be on four sides?
Signage will be on two sides, and that's what's stated within the sign note that's on the plan. So, again, you'll have signage on both south-facing faces of those pylons that are in front of the building. Mm-hmm. And then you would have signage only on the east and the west faces of the pylon, the internal, the north-facing face, and then the internal face would not have signage on it.
Okay. I just saw the square, and I was looking at the pictures in the back, and it was kind of it was hard to read some of them. I also would assume that in the 3D views that are in the back of this packet, that the dumpster was just an oversight and was not included. But it is included on the plans. Is that?
That is likely the case.
I was just making sure.
And it would be required per code to be enclosed as well.
Correct. I was just making sure. I saw the plan, but then I didn't see any pictures. I just want to make sure it's probably just an oversight. And the building was the focus and not the dumpster. Commissioners, any additional questions before I open it to the public? I see none. Go ahead and this is a public hearing. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to come forward, please do so.
Good evening. My name is Jay Gephardt. I'm a civil engineer with a civil group here in Columbia. And first, I just want to thank the staff for their assistance in working with us to work through this project. I also want to thank the GAD boys for being my client, because this is a nice project. And they're trying to do a very nice building. And to answer your question, Ms. Russell, the signs are what I consider backlit. Similar, they like what's going on with the Boone Hospital site and so it'd be that kind of feel and that kind of look. I'm really here to answer any questions, but I think Pat has done a very good job of explaining how we got here and what we're trying to accomplish. But if you guys have questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Gephardt. Commissioners, are there any questions for the speaker? I see none. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any additional speakers that come forward at this time? I see no one. I'll go ahead and close the public hearing portion. Commissioners, discussion, questions? Mr. McMahon.
Unless my fellow commissioners have something to say. In the matter of case 17-228, GAD Boys Professional Offices PD Plan, I move to approve as stated.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon, for that motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Ms. Lowe, thank you for the second to the motion. Commissioners, we have a motion on the table for approval by Mr. McMahon and second by Ms. Lowe. Do we need any additional discussion? I see none. Ms. Vice Chair, when you're ready for a roll call, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mrs. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Toohey.
Yes.
I vote yes. Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
8, approval, 0, denial. We have approval of the motion.
Thank you, Ms. Vice Chair. Our recommendation for approval of the revised GAD Boys Professional Offices PD plan containing the site and code compliance signage parameters will be forwarded to City Council for their consideration. Public comments. Anyone within the public who would like to come forward at this time? You're welcome to do so. Staff comments. Mr. Zinner, would you have any comments for us this evening?
Yes. Next meeting will be October 19th, 2 weeks from now, same time, same place. You'll be having a work session at 5:30. Have one of my other staff members hopefully get you through more than just two uses. Then you'll have your regular Planning Commission meeting at 7 p.m. Your items on the agenda are consisting of these four. You will have the new CPS Middle School subdivision plat. This is the new Southwest Middle School down off of Sinclair Road. That will be the preliminary. We will have a Quaker Oats plat. This is basically a final plat of an existing survey tract of land that Quaker Oats building is currently on. The reason for this plat is because they are doing an expansion, and in order to be able to obtain a building permit, you must have a legal lot. So this lot, not having been previously platted, is being platted for the first time, and that is what this plat represents. There's really no significant issues associated with that document. And then the long-awaited Calder and Brooks combination of activities that we have, the Calder annexation, which is and permanent zoning. This is what is directly across from the Elks Lodge on WW, RS to R1, and then the Brooks subdivision plat number 2, which is a continuation, in essence, of what is up off of Rolling Hills today that was part of the Richland Road annexation request, roughly a 400-lot single-family subdivision that's proposed. So you can get your context and your bearings. CPS Middle School site here on your left, the Quaker Oats plat here on the right, and then your Brooks and Calder annexation requests here, exact same property. So this is not like our last annexation request at meeting prior where we had two different areas. It is the exact same area. And the subdivision plan does connect to the northern, northeast portion, which is the first phase of the Brooks development. I had handed out to you this evening during work session notice in regards to the 2018 Smart Growth Conference, February 1st through the 3rd of 2018. You will need to discuss amongst yourselves, and there will be an agenda item for you to discuss on the October 19th agenda as to who may want to go. I have recently received budget information from the city clerk based on the FY18 budget. I do not know what the dollar amount is yet. It was not increased from last year. So what I will tell you is there may be a financial limitation as it relates to sending multiple commissioners. Depending on what the costs are for travel, we may have enough to send two of you, unlike what we have done in the past where we have been able to send more due to the more cost-effective location. So you will need to discuss amongst yourself who has been recently and whose turn it may be in the rotation. So that'll be an item for you to maybe spend 15-20 minutes on at the next meeting. Check your schedules, find out if you've got time. If you want to make a bigger trip out of it, you're more than welcome to do so, but we won't cover your dime. With that as well, we will come back to you with some additional information in regards to our rules of procedure. I will provide you again a Word editable document of what Ms. Rushing had provided, along with probably a tentative special work session date for sometime in the early part of December of this year, and once we have all of our commissioners back just before our Christmas break. But with that, that is all I have to offer for this evening. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Commissioning comments? Commissioners, any comments for the public? I see none. Anyone like to make a motion for adjournment?
I'll move to adjourn.
We have a second.
Second.
Mr. Stanton, thank you for that second. All in favor, thumbs up. We're adjourned. Have a nice evening. Adjourned. Have a nice evening.